Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Reconsider. We have a really great show for you today. We had Enrique Fonseca from Visual Politique, the YouTube channel, who has been on our show before and talked about Podemos. And we had such a good conversation that it went a little longer than we usually have our episodes. So we ended up breaking this up into two parts. So it will stop somewhere in the middle. Just know that the next episode will pick right back up where we left off. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Reconsider, where we don't do the thinking for you. Today, we have an exciting guest coming back to our show, Fonseca from Visual Politique. He joined us late last year to discuss Podemos, the Spanish political party, and some of the theories for why they rose and how they apply to U.S. politics. And today, we're going to be discussing about some of the nationalist movements in Europe, especially in Catalonia. So, Fonseca, welcome to Reconsider.
Happy to be back in my favorite political podcast.
Aw, that's high praise coming from you, man.
Well, it's the best political podcast made by the best political host you can ever find in America.
Please keep going. Please tell us about how awesome we are.
Yeah.
You are pretty awesome. You know, I love you guys. I'm a big fan. Never miss it.
Fonseca is one of our favorite folks on the internet with politics as well. So his show, Visual Politique, with a K at the end, is a great YouTube resource. He has these short videos in English now, which is an update since a year ago when we last talked with him. They're great snippets that really help you stay informed about what's going on in different parts of the world. He's got great music, great pace. It's funny. It's a lot of fun.
And great vocals. There is an awesome guy, a couple of awesome guys do the voiceover in English, and they do it great.
Yeah, you should. We should find out who those people are and thank them.
Yep.
So if you guys haven't gone to YouTube and checked out Visual Politique, do it right now. If you speak Spanish, the original channel is in Spanish. There's now a channel in English. The content is great. 10 to 15 minute long videos, little snippets of just they're really fantastic and comprehensive summaries of much of what you need to know about lots of topics that you've never considered before. So check out Visual Politique.
And we've brought back Fonseca, our expert on Spain and Europe, to talk again about Europe. We've already talked Brexit. We've talked about the rise of anti-immigrant sentiment in Europe in response to the refugee crisis. And now we're going to talk about independence movements. We're seeing a very different Europe from what we remember in the 1990s and early 2000s. And Fonseca is going to help us understand why. And so we're going to start with the biggest ticket news item in Europe's independence movement right now, Catalonia. And the big question to start with, Fonseca, is why Catalonia? Why are they seeking independence and why now?
Well, the first thing I would like to clarify is that Catalonian independentism has absolutely nothing to do with Brexit. There is no anti-immigrant feeling whatsoever. And it's not a right-wing kind of thing, if you want to put it that way. It's actually, even though some of the independentist politicians in Catalonia, they are right-wing, they are center right wing, more or less, and they are heavily supported by really liberal and even extreme liberal politicians. So it's not like it has absolutely nothing to do with the Brexit thing or the Northern Italian independentist movements that you see, you've seen in the past. This said, the Catalan independentism, it's been always there. It's been like an ongoing thing for decades since Spanish democracy came up in the 70s. And now it has become more important and more powerful for mainly two reasons. The first one is that Spain, after the financial crisis in 2008 and 2009, it really hit the country extremely hard. So while America is already recovering and the rest of Europe is already recovering from the crisis, and you can even say that they are growing, the Spanish economy is still suffering an existential crisis. When I was a child, I used to feel like I was living in a first world country. And I remember all the politicians were comparing Spain with Germany, with France. We were feeling like we were getting there. We were getting at the same league as the other European powerhouses. Now, not anymore. With the financial crisis, all the Spaniards will realize that, okay, we are not a poor country. This is not a third world country, but it's not exactly a first world country anymore. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, entirely. It is a developed country that has dealt with enough economic issues where people who had become accustomed to a certain standard of living are not finding it anymore.
Yep, that's the thing. For a better understanding, one out of two young Spaniards have no job. Most of my friends have been years struggling to get a first job, and the salaries are also extremely low for the younger generation. In 2012, we were virtually being bailed out by European Union. So that creates a feeling that it's not cool to be part of Spain anymore. And that's why all these nationalist movements that they were breeding before the financial crisis now became more powerful, because now a lot of people that probably in the past might be a little bit more hesitating whether if it's a good idea to be part of Spain or not, now they have clarified their ideas and now they say, no, we don't want to be part of Spain anymore. This is the first thing. The second thing is that precisely because of this financial crisis in Spain, a lot of regions found themselves on the middle of a debt crisis. So they couldn't repay their debts and they had to be bailouted by the Spanish government. Government that at the same time was being bailouted by the European government. One of those regions was Catalonia, because Catalonia, even though it's one of the industrial powerhouses in Spain and one of the wealthiest regions in the country, they have an enormous debt. And this is why in 2012, the Catalonian president, back then, he was called Artur Mas, well, the Catalonian governor, I guess we should call it a governor for the American audience so they can more or less understand that Catalonia is like, in a way, we could compare it to a state in the United States of America. So we have they have a governor, they have a legislative body and with some powers, they have some taxes, their special legislation, etc. So the Catalonian governor, Artur Mas, he went to meet the Spanish Prime Minister, Mariano Rajoy, and he wanted to have a special tax plan so he could deal with the debt crisis better and then again keep part of his autonomy. And Mariano Rajoy, he said, absolutely not. I'm not giving you any special fiscal treatment. So then Artur Mas came back to Catalonia and he said, well, since you don't give me the special treatment I need, I'm going to break up with the country.
So do you think that the independence, well, I don't want to say the independence movement, the referendum is primarily tied to a combination of the economic crisis and the inability of Artur Mas to get some sort of special treatment? Because the question that always comes to my mind when there's an independence movement like this that actually, you know, something new develops is why now? I mean, like you said, this independence movement is not new, but the fact that the referendum occurred and it has had, you know, far-reaching enough consequences for Madrid to come down and, like, you know, start cracking skulls, something changed.
Yeah, you can say the financial crisis was like the catalyst for a lot of problems inside of the country. With the economy, we realized that we had a lot of debt, that we had a lot of deficit, that we had a lot of corruption. And this is also very important because one of the most corrupted regions in the country is Catalonia. And some people might argue that part of the reasons that led the Catalonian politicians to seek the independence was to create like a, can I say, smoke curtain?
Smoke screen
to hide all these corruption scandals that they were suffering back in the moment. For instance, Artur Mas, the first Catalonian government, in openly saying that he wants to be independent, now he cannot run for elections anymore because he's being judged by lots of corruption and scandals. So that's another big factor that that plays an important role on this Catalonian independentism.
So the Catalonian referendum was very popular. It got something like 93% support. Now, the turnout wasn't super high. It was in the mid-40s, which is kind of like a presidential election. But it did look like the people who voted seemed to be in favor of it. There are some questions about, you know, the accuracy of the polling due to a lot of irregularities and Madrid trying to stop a lot of the voting. But assuming that, well, the first question is, did it seem like the Catalonians really supported it? And if so, what makes them really believe that they're better off on their own? What makes them believe that they'll be more successful without Madrid?
As I said before, Catalonia is still one of the wealthiest and most prosperous regions in the country. If you go to any supermarket in Spain, you're going to see that the frozen pizza, the ice creams, and most of the products that you can buy are made in Catalonia. They have most of the companies, most of the industry, and they feel that they are sponsoring the poorest regions in the south, especially Andalusia and Extremadura. If you go to one of the southern cities like Granada or Marbella, which are pretty famous for tourists, so probably some of our listeners have been in those cities on vacation, you will see that the unemployment is way higher there. The education is way lower. In the PISA report, all these regions, all these southern regions, they rank way lower than the northern regions. And this is why the Catalonians, they are a little bit frustrated because they feel that all their tax money is going to pay all the inefficiency in the southern regions. And this is why they think that if they were by themselves, they would be better off.
I want to do just a quick recap for American listeners who might not be as familiar with this referendum and what happened. So I'm just going to give like a 30-second rundown. As Fonseca has been talking about, Catalonians have a number of reasons why they want to be, if not independent, then at least more autonomous than they already are. Catalonia is the region in the northeast of Spain. It sits on the Mediterranean. It's where Barcelona is. So if you've ever heard of Barcelona, that's where Catalonia is. They had a referendum in October of 2017. I think it was October 1st. And the central government of Spain from Madrid said, you know, this is not going to be a binding referendum. Catalonian leaders said, yes, actually it is. It happened. Eric mentioned some of the stats, 93% in favor of independence, although low turnout. And in the run-up to the referendum and afterwards as well, the Madrid government used violence. I mean, not extreme violence, but definitely violence to try to suppress some of the protests, took a lot of election materials from the voting booths. So it's been more of an escalation of Madrid against one of the regions than we've seen in a long time. It is not the only independence movement in Spain. We had in the Basque Country, which is another region in the north, had ETA, which is an acronym for something I don't remember right now, but it was a terrorist organization in the 70s.
It means Euskadi Ta Astatuta, which in Basque means something like the Basque country should be free or something like this. I don't speak Basque, but...
Got it. And maybe before we dig into like some of the context, the historical context for how Spain got to where it is, which kind of sets the stage for a lot of what's going on, Fonseca, maybe if you have, you know, some insight on this, you can tell us why you think the Basque Country did become violent in the 70s, and right now we're not really seeing, you know, any sort of overt terrorism on the part of the Catalonians in order to achieve independence. Why is that?
Well, actually, the Catalonians, they used to have a terrorist organization in the 80s, but it was way worse organized than ETA. So the Catalonian terrorist band, it was called Terra y Lliure, which means in Catalonian free land or free soil. But they were way worse organized, as I said. So the police really captured them and they stopped the violent movement almost in a couple of years. So perhaps one of the reasons why the Basque nationalism was more violent, it's because ETA was better organized. They had the support also of a lot of communist organizations all over Europe. So it's more a organization thing than a political thing. Probably there are some cultural things, because also we have to don't forget that the Catalonian nationalism, despite what it looks, has nothing to do with the Basque nationalism. The Basque nationalists, they do have another project for a totally different country, way more decentralized. While the Catalonian nationalists, they are not necessarily for decentralization. Probably a Catalonian new country, a brand new Catalonian state, would have Barcelona as the capital, and it would be absolutely centralized, put everything inside of Catalonia. You can see it. If you go to Catalonia, Catalonia, you would see that all the factories, all the government office, all the administrative buildings are in Barcelona. The rest of the Catalonian cities are virtually empty, while in the Basque Country is the other way around. The Basque Country is absolutely homogeneous. You go with the car and you will see factories all over the place. There is no a specific capital where everything is concentrated.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
That's really fascinating. So we're seeing some very different approaches to what independence would look like between Catalonia and the Basque Country. One of the things I'm curious about is, you know, Catalonia decided now was the time to shoot for independence and have a referendum. And as far as I can tell, Basque Country seems pretty quiet by comparison. So why isn't Basque Country trying to become independent right now the same way Catalonia is?
Well, first of all, because they tried in 2006. They tried and it didn't work out. So actually the Basque Nationalist Party that used to be in power forever, it was like the Basque Country was like a one party system. It was like the Republicans in Texas. Well, so the Basque Nationalists were always in power in the Basque Country, and they lost the elections for the first time after the failure of their independentist movement. So they tried and they saw it failed and they said, okay, never again. We let's keep things as they are. We are cool the way we are. Besides, the Basque Country has already a special fiscal treatment with the central government, which makes them happier than the Catalonians.
So the Basques were able to win a lot of the autonomy that they were looking for without becoming directly independent?
No, actually they had it before. The Basque Country has been always special instead of Spain. You see, all the Spanish regions, all the Spanish states, if you want to put it that way, whenever they are paying the taxes, they pay the taxes to the central government, to Madrid. And then Madrid shares all that money the way they want. They say, okay, this percentage is going to go to Andalusia. This other percentage is going to go to Catalonia, to Galicia, to all the different regions, except by the Basque Country and Navarra, which are two specific regions. If you don't know what I'm talking about, do you remember the running the bull when Ernest Hemingway was going to Spain and he was running in front of the bulls? Well, so that was in Navarra, which is close to the Basque Country. Those two regions, they have a special fiscal treatment. They don't pay the taxes to Madrid. They collect the taxes taxes by themselves, and then they give a special and a specific share of that money to the central government. So that makes a huge difference because they have way more power to manage their own money.
But Catalonia does not have that.
Catalonia does not have that. That's actually what the Catalonian governor, Artur Mas, what he wanted to get with the central government, and they didn't want to give it to him.
Right, because Catalonia is so rich, and it probably provides a whole lot of taxes to Madrid. So it'd be a huge problem for the Madrid government, which is already, you know, in dire fiscal straits, to lose some of that tax revenue. Is that right?
Yeah. It's part of that is the economy. Part of that is the emotions. According to the central government, losing Catalonia or accepting more autonomy for Catalonia would be a total failure, especially given that the current government, the current Spanish government, is conservative. It belongs to the PP, which is, in a way, like the Republicans, but in Spain. Way more different, because Spain has a totally different ideologies, but just to make a comparison, they will be like the Republicans. And part of their creed is that Spain has to be a unified country, and they are more in favor of centralized things and give more power to the capital, to Madrid. So it'll be a total failure for them and their voters.
Right. And that's another difference between them and the Republicans, because often the Republicans want more power to the states in the United States. They tend to say stuff like states' rights and want to reduce the power of Washington, D.C. And it's the Democrats that tend to be more in favor of, well, say that, and then, of course, it changes. In the United States, of course, it changes based on who's in charge, right? So when your party's in charge in the United States, you tend to be more excited about Washington, D.C. having more power to do stuff. And when you're out of power, you become more of a state's rights person. So it goes back and forth more in the United States.
Yeah, but in general, yeah, I would say that it's actually the opposite of United States. In Spain, in the political mindset of us, of Spaniard, centralization and more power to the capital, it's kind of a right-wing idea. Even a right-wing radical in Spain would say, f*** the autonomies, f*** the regions, only Madrid, and let's go for a 100% centralized system as they used to have in France, for instance. That's what a right-wing fanatic would say in Spain. And the left-wing fanatics, they are more in favor of a more federal system and give more power to the regions.
Which is even distinct from some of the other right-wing parties in the rest of Europe that are calling for a decentralization, at least at the level of the EU versus nations.
Yeah, the thing is, in Spain, there is no Euroscepticism whatsoever. Even the far right wing is pro-European.
I think one of the other major differences between Spain and the United States that we should clarify for American listeners is how sort of Spain's regions came to be part of Spain. And one of the things you mentioned, Fonseca, was that you can think of Catalonia as a state, you know, like Texas or something. And I think there's a key difference in the history of, you know, how Spain was populated and organized that makes it clear how identity plays a big part into this. Because you talk about the Catalonians, and we have, you know, we have a small number of secessionists in different states in the United States, Texas, California, but it's pretty rare. And so the idea of the Catalonian people or the Basque people is not as familiar to the United States because we just have Americans that happen to live in certain states and they have different cultures, but there's something special about Spanish history that we don't share. And so what I want to do is like do a quick rundown from my understanding as an American and then let you sort of correct me where it's wrong or expand where it makes sense. And so, you know, the United States, of course, the current vast majority of the population immigrated here, you know, during and after the colonial times. And so it's a lot of Europeans primarily who came to the United States because they wanted to be here for one reason or another. It's somewhat ethnically mixed up. There's a lot of, you know, people of Anglo descent, of German descent, and of many other European regions. And then, of course, there's a lot of Asians, Africans, South Americans, etc. But you know, this all happened in the past few hundred years. Whereas, of course, Spain, the vast majority of the population that lives in Spain, those groups lived there for a long time, right? So, you know, long, long ago, there were a bunch of different tribes. And this is like a lot of places in Europe. And these tribes were running around before other powers showed up to create, you know, any sort of united, united governing there. And so, you know, even before the Romans, the Greeks and the Carthaginians were the first ones to settle Spain from the outside. And they set up, you know, a huge presence on the southern coast inside the Mediterranean, which extends all the way up to Catalonia for certain, in part because of all the silver there. And then the Romans went and booted them out and took it. You know, then for a few hundred years, Spain was Spain was a region as part of the Roman government. And then Rome fell and the Visigoths got kicked out of France or Gaul by the Franks. They took over and established the Kingdom of Toledo over much of Spain, but not all of it. But you still had a lot of different tribes in that area. You had Franks, Burgundians, Sueves, Alans, Vandals, and of course, these Basque people. The Visigoths fell, and then the Moors, who were came in from Africa, they were part of the Caliphate. They came over and took over most of the peninsula. And for eight centuries, the Catholic monarchs who were kind of confined to the north waged the Reconquista and reunited Spain, or really kind of united it as a full country for the first time in the 1400s. And so over that whole period, many of Spain's regions have been very different. There wasn't, you know, they developed before there was the kind of infrastructure that the United States developed with railroads and telegraphs and stuff like that. A lot of mountains in Spain, and you can see a map on the notes, separate different regions. And so Catalonia, for example, is in its own basin. The Basque country is in its own basin, separated by plateaus from Madrid. And so you actually had a lot of different languages due to this historical development. So Catalonians speak Catalan, which is different from Spanish, but it's a Romance language. The Basque country people speak an entirely different language. It's one of those, it's a non-Indo-European language, and it might be kind of related to Hungarian and Finnish. And Galicia in the northwest is also separated by a mountain range, so it's very separated from Madrid.
Yeah, but let me clarify one thing. When you say that Catalonia has been always there as a specific region with a specific language and a specific culture, I'm not that sure. In fact, it was the kingdom of Aragon. Like Spain prior to 1492, when they discovered America and they finished the Reconquista, as you explained it so good, Spain was divided in different kingdoms, mainly Castilla, Navarra, the kingdom of Granada, which was the Muslim kingdom, and the kingdom of Aragon. And Aragon was formed by what is now Catalonia and other regions that were next to it. So, in fact, Catalonia was the poorest part of the kingdom and the least important part. Of course, they speak Catalonian. Usually the people in Catalonia, they are bilingual. They speak perfect Spanish and perfect Catalonian. But the Catalonian is not that, how to say, Spanish and Catalonian, they were born at the same time because they both come from Latin. So probably these Catholic kingdoms, they would speak Latin on their official communications. And then the peasants, they spoke Castellano, the normal Spanish, what we call now Spanish, in the regions of Castilla, they would spoke Castellano, but the peasants, and in Aragon and Catalonia, they would speak Catalonian. It was the language of the peasants.
And so the people of these regions have these different languages. And would you agree that for a long time, they've had a sort of different identity? Like, they see themselves as Spanish, but they see themselves also as like fundamentally as a people somewhat different from the Spaniards who live in Madrid?
Yes, I think they... I mean, it depends, because identity is pretty relative. You can feel... Perhaps some people from Texas, they feel like they are totally different from someone from California, and others will not. So, but yes, in general, I would say that the Catalonians, they are more, I don't know, they have a different feeling. I don't know how to explain it. But you will have the same with the people from the south, or, I mean, every region has its own identity and its own cultural things.
It's true. Yeah. I say that this is different from the United States, but we did have our own war internally in the 1800s where the South tried to break away entirely and a lot of people died for it. So maybe it's not so different.
Well, yeah, probably it's not so different. No, but the thing is, when we had wars in Spain, it was for ideological reasons more than regionalism. Regionalism played a role, but it was different. No, I wouldn't go that way.
So you think regionalism hasn't been a big part of, you know, when Spain was united in the 1400s, you think regionalism has not been a really big part of Spain's politics for the past 500 some odd years?
It's been an important thing, but not as important as to start a war with. Like, for instance, part of the nationalist creed is that they say that the Catalan nationalism traced back from the 18th century. Well, in fact, there was a war, a secession war, between the supporters of the Habsburg monarchy and the supporters of the Bourbon monarchy, the royal house that we have now. And the Catalans were on the side of the Habsburg. So they were on the side of the ones who lost the war. But it was not a regionalist war. It was more an ideological or a royal house war, where some people were supporting one king, other people were supporting the other. But both of the sides were part of Spain, and they just wanted to make the whole country follow their king and their ideas. Habsburg monarchy were more into decentralization, and the Bourbon monarchs were more into a centralized government. But it's more of an ideological thing rather than a regionalist. even though regionalists can play a role, of course, because if you consider that your regional identity is stronger than your national identity, of course, you're going to be more in favor of a decentralized government.
But this is the first time Catalonia is considered seriously breaking away from Spain entirely.
And it's not the first time that they do it. They tried to do it in the Second Republic in the 30s. But most of the... I mean, I could say that Catalonian nationalism, the way we know it today, it traces back to the beginning of the 20th century. Just like the Basque nationalism. All this regional nationalism were born in the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century.
And that's not too surprising, because if we think of, for example, Wilsonianism and self-determination as an idea, right, that became Wilson, President Wilson popularized that in Europe after the First World War, although, of course, it didn't really take hold nearly as much as he wanted. But that idea of self-determination, of a people being able to govern themselves rather than be governed by this much bigger, you know, maybe imperial or larger authority, you know, became popular in the 1800s and 1900s in Europe, you know, is essentially the rise of nationalism.
Could be. It's also, I mean, probably it plays a role because, of course, America is always an inspirational powerhouse also, and it creates political ideas that then they are mirrored in other countries. But it also has a lot to do with the political divide between conservatives and liberals in the 19th century. For instance, the Basque nationalism was born because those who were in favor of a more traditionalist society, a more traditionalist approach, they didn't like the way Spain was going. Spain was going more on a liberal fashion, and they were against it. And this is why they said, okay, we want to break apart with Spain. And with Catalonia, it happened something similar. The Catalonian nationalism is the other way around. They were more liberal, and they wanted to break away with Spain when they saw that Spain was going a little bit more on a more conservative fashion.
So zooming back to fast forward to now, Catalonia declared independence. What happened next?
So what happens next? I think no one really knows, because, I mean, the problem here is that on the legal side, the Spanish Constitution doesn't recognize this self-determination for any region. So if you want to do it legally, you should change first the Constitution, or maybe beat around the bush and create a legal and find some legal loophole, and it'll be complicated. But then, from the political side, the problem is that now, today, the Spanish government that we have now is conservative. They will never allow anything to the Catalonians, because they will lose votes. I mean, actually, for Mariano Rajoy, what he's doing now, trying to be the strong man on the country and put an iron fist on Catalonia, it's really good for him, elections-wise. And the same goes to the Catalonian government. The more they play the role of a rebel who wants to fight against the system and fight against Madrid, probably the better for them. So it's also kind of a theater.
I think a question a lot of people might have right now, at least in the US perhaps, is why spend so much time talking about a secessionist movement in one part of Spain that, you know, a lot of folks might be familiar with, might not be familiar with. How does this play into the larger picture, right? And the thing is, this secessionist movement, the independence movement in Catalonia, is not constrained to Catalonia. We are seeing trends all throughout Europe towards decentralization, not only between nations within the European Union, but of course, regions within nations. So Catalonia, perhaps, is the most well-known, the most discussed, but there are others. There is Lombardy and Veneto in Italy that just had referendum votes that passed both in the affirmative. I think the constitution that governs regions' interactions with the nation in Italy are somewhat different than they are in Spain. So we haven't seen as much of a sort of a violent reaction from the central government. And as I understand it, and I think one way to try to interpret what all of these different independence or autonomous movements mean is by looking at the similarities. And I'll be curious to get your take on this, Fonseca, but as I see it, as I understand it, we see, and you mentioned this, a number of divisions caused by the economic crisis in 08, 08, 09. And this has created a number of disaffected groups of people. And, you know, part of this accounts for the rise of Podemos because the Spanish economy was doing so poorly. And these people who are disaffected are frustrated because they feel that, you know, whatever solutions are being proposed might fail, and those proposing those solutions aren't really going to suffer to the same degree that they have. And, you know, when shit gets pretty bad, people remember very quickly who's actually in charge. And whether or not someone identifies with the identity of the leadership, I think plays a fairly big role in this. So when things are okay, you know, I think these regionalist movements that are not new, but that have become pronounced by the crisis and by the financial recession of 08-09, I think people remember very quickly that they're frustrated about these things and they just got kind of shoved under the rug when everything was going okay.
Have you ever read the Ortega y Gasset? You that I know, Sander, you speak a perfect Spanish, so maybe you know about Ortega y Gasset. If you don't, I strongly recommend you one of his books. It's called La España Invertebrada, the Invertebrated Spain, where he covers on a political philosophy point of view, from a political philosophy perspective, he covers the issue of the nationalism. And there are two main ideas on this book that I would like to bring here. One is that every nation, every country that we know today has been created, whether by merging two countries that existed in the past or breaking up one country into two or three different entities. When does the breakup happens, or when does the merge happens? Well, when there is a project that makes people happy and motivated. So whenever you have a country that has some principles together and people feel like they are better off together, then you're going to have a merge. That's the case of the United States. You can have a crisis, you can have better times, bad times, but in general, Americans, you feel like you are better off being all together because, well, you have a good country with some good institutions. There is a sense of a project. America is not only a country, it's a project. European Union, well, to some people, it feels like a project. It feels like there is some sense of not only identity, but also that we are better off being Europeans. There is some kind of illusion, European illusion. In Spain, it's happening the other way around. People are feeling more and more disappointed with the Spanish project because there is no sense of a project. There is a sense of pure decadence, and this is why we're having the separatism. And the same happens in Italy. The same happens in every country where people feel like there is no project anymore. So this is why there is nationalism and separatism is not something of today. Something that is going to be all the time in every country where there is a sense of disappointment. You have it too in Romania. All the Hungarian-speaking minorities that live in Transylvania and want to separate with Bucharest. And when you speak to them, you speak to those Hungarian-speaking people, and what they are going to tell you is that they really hate the Romanians, that they don't want to be part of that. They say this is a country that it's breaking apart. It's full of corruption. It's full of poverty. It's never going to be a first world country. We don't want to be part of this.
I'll make a quick plug real quick. Fonseca Visual Politic did a show on Transylvania's push for greater autonomy from Romania. So if that's something that interests you, go check it out. So we're actually going to pause there. That will be the end of part one of our conversation with Fonseca. Check back in next time. We'll have the rest.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.